church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
The church is in Africa, at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Culture and Society. We shall close with the news for young people. I am John Baptist Tumusime. The Holy See released on Thursday Pope Francis's message for this year's World Day for Social Communication, which will be marked on May 24th. The theme of the message is taken from the book of Exodus, chapter 10, verse 2, and focuses on storytelling. The Pope notes that communication should be based on stories that contain the truth, stories that build up, and stories that help us to rediscover our roots and the strength we need to move forward together. He adds that we need stories that can speak of ourselves and of the beauty around us, stories that can regard our world and its happenings with a tender gaze, stories that can tell us that we are part of a living and interconnected world, and that can reveal what unites and what connects us to one another. The Archbishop of Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo Besungu, has called upon Christians to be united in defense of human dignity. The Cardinal was speaking on Wednesday in Kinshasa at the ecumenical celebration in the ongoing week of prayer for Christian unity. Cardinal Ambongo called upon the followers of Christ to overcome divergences in order to be sincerely reconciled to the Lord. He explained that this does not mean giving up one's religious confession, but necessarily finding the elements that bring unity. He went on to say that defending human dignity means, among other things, to speak out against the cruel and humiliating treatment inflicted on the inhabitants in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. For more than 20 years now, the region has been a battleground between rebel forces and government troops, as well as ethnic clashes, which have killed many people and displaced tens of thousands. The same region was struck by the Ebola epidemic in 2018, which has aggravated the situation. The chairman of the Justice and Peace Commission of the Kenya Catholic Bishops' Conference, Bishop John Obala Owa of Ngongo, has launched the Lenten campaign against corruption, whose theme is Stewardship for a Transformed Nation, My Obligation. The launch took place this week in the capital, Nairobi. In prepared remarks, Bishop Owa told reporters that Christians have a special responsibility to share the kingly, prophetic, and priestly life of Christ. Their stewardship must imitate that of Christ. The bishop explained that what we are and everything we have belong to God. We are simply managers acting on God's behalf. Quoting scripture, he said, "Everything God created is good. Human beings were created in the image and likeness of God and commanded to govern creation rationally to bring forth fruit from the earth. Corruption," he added, "is a form of injustice, and as such, it goes against God's plan for man." According to the program, for 5 weeks, starting from February 22nd, the faithful will be invited to reflect on a topic each week. The topics are responsible farming, youth and development, natural resource management, leadership and accountability, and the sanctity of life and human dignity. The Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference will launch its new pastoral plan at Regina Mundi Catholic Church in Soweto this coming Sunday, January 26th. The conference spokesman, Archbishop William Slattery, said the objective of the pastoral plan is to respond to the needs of our time. The theme of the pastoral plan is evangelizing communities serving God, humanity, and all creation. In remarks, the president of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference, Bishop Sitembele Sipuka, said the changed situations and the need to respond to them differently and effectively has required a new pastoral approach. The members of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference are Botswana, Eswatini, the former Swaziland, and South Africa. China has confirmed the transmission of the coronavirus between humans after laboratory tests. The disease was identified last year in some parts of the country. By the beginning of this week, it had spread to three provinces, compelling the authorities to quarantine their capitals. Reports from South and Central America say some cases of coronavirus have been identified in Colombia and Mexico. The patients had returned from China. Liz Scafid reports.
The Chinese National Health Commission confirmed on Monday that two people in Guangdong province had been infected via human-to-human transmission, raising the potential of the so-called coronavirus spreading more widely. More from WHO spokesperson Tariq Yasharovich.
Based on current information, an animal source seems the most likely primary source of this outbreak, with limited human-to-human transmission occurring between close contacts. Based on previous experience with respiratory illnesses and in particular with other coronavirus outbreaks, and our analysis of data shared by China, human-to-human transmission is occurring.
Liz Scafidi, UN News.
You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Authorities in Angola's former colonial power, Portugal, on Thursday said they have launched inquiries into various firms where the Angolan billionaire Isabel dos Santos holds stakes. The statement followed an announcement by Angola's chief prosecutor that Isabel could face an international arrest warrant if she fails to cooperate in a fraud investigation. Angola has named Isabel dos Santos as a suspect over alleged mismanagement and misappropriation of funds in the country. The malpractice is believed to have occurred while she was chairwoman of state oil firm Sonango between 2016 and 2017. Isabel is the daughter of former President José Eduardo dos Santos and allegedly Africa's richest woman. Tanzanian President John Magufuli on Thursday fired his Home Affairs Minister Kangi Lugola. The president accuses the minister of mismanaging a 408 million euro fire department contract. The presidency said that the deal was for the purchase of firefighting and rescue equipment. Magufuli, who faces re-election for a second five-year term this year, has cultivated the image of an uncompromising leader who swiftly fires ministers and officials who are found wanting. The fire department, which falls under the Home Affairs Ministry, had signed the contract with an unnamed Romanian firm without involving the finance ministry or securing parliamentary approval, Magufuli said. He told a government event in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam that the major issue with Minister Lugola was the lack of integrity. Eurasia Resources Group's Africa unit said on Thursday it will suspend operations at Chambish Metals in Zambia due to a shortage of copper and cobalt concentrates required to produce cathode. Zambia is Africa's second largest copper producer. The mineral-rich country has recently introduced a 5% import tax on raw materials. The move has affected the flow of concentrates from mines in neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. The miner said it was engaged with stakeholders and was exploring other sources of feed in order to resume operations. The Chambish Metals refinery has a capacity of 6,800 tons per annum of cobalt metal and 55,000 tons per annum of copper metal. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio. This is Culture and Society, and you are welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The wound that you don't see is the one that cuts the deepest. That's how Dr. Natalia Kanem describes the seriousness of the reality of the violence against girls and women. Recent reports have shown that 33,000 girls under the age of 18 are married every day and often against their will, and one in three women will face sexual violence. Dr. Kanema is the executive director of the United Nations Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency. She says that ending sexual violence against girls must be our goal. In a special interview with Daniel Johnson in Geneva recently, Dr. Kanem explained how widespread this gender-based violence is.
It is really important to highlight the prevalence, how common violence against women and girls is.
So how widespread is gender-based violence?
It's shocking that gender-based violence is so prevalent. One in three women or girls in their lifetime affected. And in some of the places where the UN serves, like South Sudan, you might as well say one in one, because the prevalence is at 90%. And this is trauma. This is trauma that's not only physical, but as women have told me over and over, the wound that you don't see is the one that cuts the deepest.
I know that UNFPA, the Agency for Sexual and Reproductive Health, has also done some research into conflict zones, and one of those is Syria. And you spoke to some Syrian girls who said the last thing we expected to have to watch out for was sexual violence. We thought it would be bombs. So it isn't just in conflict zones, of course. So what's the action that UNFPA, the UN Agency for Sexual and Reproductive Health, is trying to do right now?
The action against sexual and gender-based violence that we need to see is, first of all, empowerment of women and girls to be able to say no during peacetime. This is a problem that's exacerbated in conflict, but it is there, and it is still stigmatized so that the victim is still shamed and blamed rather than being able to seek support immediately.
Shamed and blamed means being thrown out of school, not being able to keep a job because the employers don't understand that young mothers, often on their own, sometimes their family shun them as well.
The tragedy about sexual and gender-based violence is that we don't speak out, and so people are scared. Now, why should women and girls live their life in fear? Action against sexual and gender-based violence involves expressing, in no uncertain terms, as the Secretary General has done, zero tolerance. That also means opening the door so that people who have been affected can be treated and healed, but also so that they can seek the justice that they deserve, and so that everyone, men, boys, women, and girls, will be able to understand clearly that this is not normal. That's the whole point.
Tell me about the pledges that you're hoping to achieve by 2030 as part of the Sustainable Development Goals.
The three zeros of UNFPA speak to the demands that women have for the Sustainable Development Goals era. And first is to meet the unmet need for family planning. This means control over your body, control over your fertility, and it has wonderful knock-on effects for economies. However, the main point is human rights of women and girls. The second one is something that I'm very optimistic that we're going to achieve resoundingly, and that is to end unnecessary deaths during pregnancy and childbirth. But the third one is the toughest one, and that is ending sexual and gender-based violence. This is the whole spectrum from female genital mutilation, and the pledge from President Kenyatta in Nairobi when he opened the Nairobi summit last month to end female genital mutilation in Kenya reverberated throughout the country. Now,
in a good way.
Absolutely, because in the closing, a 13-year-old girl stood up and said, "I come from a slum community, and I am so happy to know that my president is going to protect me from being cut." We also have, sadly, a form of gender-based violence, which is the 33,000 girls under the age of 18 who will be married by midnight today. So again, understanding that there is no 14-year-old, there is no 16-year-old who is ready to become a parent, and also that many of these marriages are really not consensual, ergo, they're not marriages. There is coercion. This is a form of violence against girls that needs to come to an end.
Just to pick you up on a few of those points that you raised, you mentioned that death among girls in childbirth is the second leading cause of death among 15 to 18-year-olds around the world, I think.
It's the leading cause of death among adolescent girls.
I stand corrected, so we can see immediately the problem. And regionally speaking, where are the areas, the countries and the continents where the problem is highest?
Well, the idea of teenage pregnancy disguises sometimes the coercion that can be involved in terms of girls who become pregnant very young. Right now, Latin America and the Caribbean have to face up to having the second highest adolescent pregnancy rate in the world. This is where I hail from, by the way. And Africa has the highest rate. I will also rush to say that with migration patterns, we're seeing that certain types of marriages, certain types of pregnancies are occurring all over the world. So every region has this issue, but those are the ones that lead at the moment.
Now, coming back to the fact that today is the 10th of December, Human Rights Day, I don't know if you saw Michelle Bachelet's, the High Commissioner of Human Rights, message that was released late yesterday. She asked a question. She asked whether world leaders were as engaged in the opening statement, the opening declaration of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights on the 10th of December, 1948, that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, and they should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. I mean, what is the situation now on the ground for girls? Are there still more under 15-year-olds who are getting pregnant than before? Or is it a more optimistic picture, or is it a bit more nuanced?
I have declared my trust in young people to change the picture that we have today. We have a generation of young people that's bigger numerically than ever before, 1.8 billion strong. And it's the mission of UNFPA and the Commission for Human Rights and all of us to empower these young people to take their place so that peace, dignity, equality, all of these elements of the larger freedom that the United Nations Charter speaks of come to fruition. Now, most young people in the world live in developing countries today. And education is so fundamental. We also have to understand that very often the opinions of young people are completely excluded by those who take decisions. So equipping young people to be able to realize their full potential means preparing them not just academically, but also encouraging them to use their voice and their power. How proud are we of the climate activists who are making it very clear that they are willing to act? During the decade of action on the Sustainable Development Goals, we're working with young people so they act in concert, so they act based on data and evidence, and so that they understand that they're part of a stakeholder community and that their opinion should be listened to.
You're smiling, but am I seeing optimism or are you seeing a paradigm shift? Are you seeing that member states are more engaged in this than before?
I am completely optimistic and I'm heartened by the outpouring of interest in the Nairobi summit, for example, where we had over 160 member states participate, and we've already had over 1,000 commitments that speak to these fundamental freedoms. I'm also extremely encouraged that the obstacles that face young people in getting an education, such as the ability to access transport and to understand that education is a right, in addition, working on jobs, working on access to information, including information about sexual and reproductive health, including truthful information that is so protective for girls, not just on the spectrum of health only, but that is part of it, but also as part of their rights. I see that we as a world community can address issues like child marriage, like FGM, and certainly like comprehensive sexuality education, which gives life-saving information to young people at a time when they need this.
Have you seen any technological benefits of things like the internet, the fourth digital revolution? Has that helped your work?
We see a dramatic upside. Coming now from Belarus, where I went to visit offices of Flow, which is the biggest health app in the world at the moment. They have over 30 million monthly subscribers. It happens to be a women's health app, and it started with menstruation. UNFPA, working with this company, has been providing content on a whole range of cycle of life issues, mainly for women, up from menstruation all the way to menopause, but also speaking out about violence and what to do if you're affected, what to do if you've been raped, and how to get help, but also how to get allies. So I'm very optimistic about the digital technology, while at the same time, of course, the abuse of women and the use of the internet to shame women is something that the UN has allied with women politicians and with others in particular who have been victimized. any technology, I mean, you know, if you drink enough water, I suppose it can kill you. We are looking for solutions, and that solution and action orientation, I think, is really going to be of great benefit to these young people who want a future that has a dignified potential.
Dr. Natalia Kanem, Executive Director of the United Nations Sexual and Reproductive Health Agency, talking there to Daniel Johnson from the United Nations News about how widespread the problem of gender-based violence is and the imperative of working for its elimination. And that is all we have time for today from me, Kanya Ntagodufri Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. Exactly a year ago today, Pope Francis departed from Rome to attend the 34th World Youth Day in the Latin American nation of Panama. Speaking about the Panama trip during the first general audience after his return, Pope Francis asked the faithful to join him in thanking God for the graces he bestowed on the church and on the people of Panama during his trip to the Latin American nation. The Pope said the groups of people gathered there formed a great symphony of faces and languages typical of this event, and the sight of the waving of so many flags was a prophetic sign that young Christians are living of peace for the world. The Holy Father recalled that one of the elements of World Youth Day is always the Via Crucis, or the Way of the Cross. In Panama, said Pope Francis, the youth carried with Jesus and Mary the suffering of so many brothers and sisters in Central America and beyond, especially those affected by forms of slavery and poverty and by HIV and AIDS. Speaking about the January 27, 2019 World Youth Day closing mass, the Holy Father said the reason Lord spoke afresh to young people, calling them to live the gospel today, because they are the today of the church and world. Finally, said Pope Francis, the oil of chrism used to consecrate the altar in the restored cathedral in Panama, and which also anoints those being baptized, confirmed, or ordained, enables families to draw life from the Holy Spirit so as to continue their pilgrimage throughout the world as young missionary disciples of Jesus Christ. The official welcome and opening ceremony of World Youth Day in Panama took place on January the 24th. Sean Patrick Lovett was in Panama City at the time, and this was how he reported on both events.
The party began at dawn. As the sun rose over the Panama Canal, colorful groups of flag-waving, singing, swinging World Youth Day pilgrims were already on the march. Their destination, the 2.5-kilometer-long coastal beltway called the Cinta Costera, that flanks the Pacific Ocean on one side and the Panama City skyline on the other. The scenic beauty of the location, its easy accessibility and size, made it the perfect choice to host the welcoming ceremony and official opening of the 34th World Youth Day. Throughout the day, pilgrims were animated and entertained by music, song and dance, so by the time Pope Francis arrived, driven through the crowd in his white Popemobile, everyone was, as they say in the trade, thoroughly warmed up and raring to go. Pope Francis looked in his element, affectionately holding hands with five young World Youth Day representatives, gratefully accepting their gift of a locally woven papal stole, attentively watching the multicultural performances of the World Youth Day anthems, actively listening to the multilinguistic presentations of the World Youth Day patron saints. Oscar Romero, Martin de Porres, Rose of Lima, John Bosco, Juan Diego, and of course, John Paul II. Then it was the young people's turn to listen to the Pope. "Peter and the Church walk with you," he began. "We want to tell you not to be afraid, to go forward with the same fresh energy and restlessness that helps make us happier and more available. Not to create a parallel church. That would be more fun and cool, thanks to a fancy youth event." Pope Francis acknowledged the sacrifices faced by many of the young people in getting here. But he reminded them, a disciple is not merely someone who arrives at a certain place, but one who sets out decisively, who's not afraid to take risks and keeps walking. This is the great joy, the Pope insisted, to keep walking. As thousands of young people applauded with approval and shouted aloud in agreement, Pope Francis reminded them how the culture of encounter is a call, inviting us to dare to keep alive a shared dream, a dream that has a place for everyone, a dream named Jesus. St. Oscar Romero provided the inspiration for the Pope when he quoted from a homily of the martyred Archbishop of San Salvador. Christianity is not a collection of truths to be believed, of rules to be followed, or of prohibitions. Christianity means pursuing the dream for which Jesus gave his life, loving with the same love with which he loved us. The final part of the Pope's reflections with the youth gathered in Panama City on Thursday evening was dedicated to a definition of love. A love that doesn't overwhelm or oppress, cast aside or reduce to silence, humiliate or domineer. The love of the Lord, he said, is a daily, discreet and respectful love, one that is free and freeing. A love that heals and raises up. It's the quiet love of a hand outstretched to serve, a commitment that draws no attention to itself. This, said Pope Francis, is a love that makes sense. The first encounter between the Pope and the young people of World Youth Day in Panama concluded with them repeating together with him, Lord, teach me to love you as you have loved us. A perfect prayer to end a perfect day. In Panama, I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
That was Sean Patrick Lovett reporting from Panama City on the welcome and official opening ceremony of the 34th World Youth Day a year ago this week. And that's all for this edition. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Development and the Economy. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.